Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, it's Lee and Keys, Real Talk. We're here, episode 170,000 something. Really doesn't matter. Evan, can you hear me, bro?
Yep, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Sound good. Shouldn't be any delay. We should be good in that department.
Perfect.
Oh, grab my AirPods. So, things have been absolutely crazy in the past 24 hours in terms of the news that we've gotten. Anthony Pettis, PFL. We have rumors of a couple things that I don't know if they're legitimate yet, but they're saying it's going to be Chandler. It's going to be Michael Chandler versus Dan Hooker for UFC 257. A lot of different pages are posting that, but I haven't seen that from really any super legitimate sources. You know, until I see that from Nolan King, from MMA Kings or Bokumoto or Ariel Helwani, those are usually people that, okay, when I see those, it's like that. But, until I see that, I don't really believe that that's the fight just yet. But it very well could be. So we'll definitely get into that. And what was the other thing? Oh, yeah, and Woodley. So I've only seen that from a couple people, but I didn't see that circulating as much as I've seen the Chandler and Hooker fight circulating about Woodley being cut from the UFC, and you had mentioned that. But I don't know if you had seen that again after that.
According to who I believe to be Woodley's manager, they're saying it's fake, that Woodley never posted it, he was hacked, it was Photoshop. Personally, I think Woodley floated it out there, just kind of see how the fans would react to see if he were to get cut, because he's on the decline. He's going to be 39 years old next year. He's 1-4, or 1-3 in his last four. Problem is, they were not competitive at all. And I don't think Tyron Woodley is in the UFC or in the fight business to just be a fighter anymore. He wants to be a champion, but it has not worked out in his last few fights. So I don't know what to think. Like I said, people are saying it's fake, but I guess only time will tell.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is with Woodley is that it's not like he's just lost his past three fights. He's been dominated in his past three fights. He's actually lost his past 15 rounds, I would say. I don't think he won a round in those three fights. Maybe some people would say otherwise. Maybe they would, but I don't think he even won a round. And, it's crazy from someone like me to say that because I love Woodley. Woodley's one of my favorite fighters. And one of the guys who really, got me back into watching, he was one of the guys who, when I got back into watching UFC, a couple of years ago now, he was one of the guys that, his fight versus Stephen Thompson, the first one, was one of the fights where I was like, okay. I was like, I'm in. You know what I mean? That was one of the first fights. That was one of the ones where that made me a fan. And I was like, okay. I was like, I need to be watching this. You know what I mean? That did that for me. And, I loved watching his reign as champion. So I'm just a big fan of Tyron Woodley. But so it's crazy for me to even admit that. But I think he lost his past 15 rounds consecutive. And like you said, it was first top competition. But at the same time, getting dominated is getting dominated, And I hope we're not, I don't think they're in the same place. I hope we're not, I hope we're not going to see the same thing with Tony Ferguson, where he's just going to keep losing fights, because he has technically gotten finished, you know, in two fights in a row now. Well, he almost actually he didn't get finished in the Oliveira. I guess I was thinking about the armbar, but he actually didn't get finished. He lost by decision.
Domination.
But basically, he got dominated in his last two fights. You know, he didn't get finished, but he did get dominated. I would say, versus Gaethje and versus and not in the same way that Woodley is, where it's like it's not even, you know, remotely competitive. But I just hopefully when he's not going into that lane where it's like I'm just going to lose all my fights now and not even be a contender. Hopefully we're not seeing that. But like you said, you know, Woodley's manager said it wasn't legit. So, you know, it could have just been him throwing that out there just to see what the reaction would be, you know, with the public. But I don't know. I don't know. I mean, hopefully not. You know, I wouldn't want to see him get cut, but at the same time, like, I also don't want to see him keep getting dominated. So if him getting cut would mean that I don't need to see him lose, because I get quite upset when he loses. The Covington fight, I wasn't upset because I predicted him to lose, and I fully was prepared for that, so it didn't bother me. But yeah, that's the thing. If he's really on that decline and is just not going to be able to compete, like you said, he's fighting for championships, not just for the sake of fighting. So if he's not going to be able to fight at the level that he wants to, then maybe that's not a terrible thing for him. But I'd rather see him retire than get cut. I would prefer that myself.
I agree. I genuinely actually agree. Like I said, it, and I understand, you know, some people are going to take that, you know, the wrong way, but like, I just don't see a path where Woodley, you know, gets his motivation back and gets his fire back. It just doesn't seem like it's there. And like we've talked about, you know, we've said it a million times already on the show, you know, he got dominated, and I actually just checked the scorecards for all three of his last three losses, and he did not win a single round, and some of those 10-8 rounds that he was losing. So he was getting, like, strictly to the definition, dominated, and it's just not going to work for him. And you're not going to see Tyron Woodley, you know, leave the UFC and go to Bellator or go to PFL. It's just not going to happen. So I would, like I said, I'd prefer him to retire. I know he wants to go out on a win. I'm sure every MMA fighter does, but it's just, sometimes you don't get that Cinderella story. And, you know, best of luck to him, and I guess we'll see what's next. I just can't see him fighting anyone, you know, just real quick. Like, he went from losing the title to Usman. Then he was going to fight Leon Edwards in a main event, but that got bumped due to COVID. So then he went and fought Burns in a main event, lost that domination, and then he went and got the Colby fight in a main event and still dominated. And that was – he had everything to win in that fight. Like, it just – you – the bragging rights, everything, and he couldn't get it done against Colby. And when I saw that, that told me that I just don't think he's got the fire – if he can't beat the guy that's been dogging him the most out of his whole career. But, yeah, like I said, we'll see what happens.
Lee, what do you think about that? I mean, we're talking about Tyron Woodley. There was kind of like rumors circulating that he had posted something on Snapchat about him being cut from the UFC. And I was just saying how, you know, well, Evan was just saying how his managers came out and said it wasn't legit. So we were just talking about, you know, whether or not it's not really whether it's fake. I mean, assuming it's fake, but, you know, kind of where Woodley's at. I was saying I'd prefer to see him retire rather than to get cut if it was true. And Evan was just kind of saying how, you know, probably he feels the same way. You know, it's probably better than seeing him get dominated the way he's been getting dominated. How do you feel about that?
First off, good evening, everybody. What's going on, fellas? I know this is a sad subject for my man Keys. Oh, have the mighty have fallen. You know, Woodley, being a champ now, he can barely win rounds. I don't see the UFC cutting them. I probably think they will probably like let him have one more fight, and then if he loses that fight, they will probably say, "All right, we're gonna give you the choice. Well, we're gonna make your choice easy. Either you retire, or we cut you, or you come out and." I just don't see it ending good, man. I just don't see it ending good. He hasn't looked good to me in a long, long time. I thought when he was fighting to be the champ, he was so much better. And once he became the champ, something just happened. It's just like, it seemed like he was satisfied. And he fought like he was satisfied. Then once he lost the belt, it's like he can't find the fire and the energy that he had when he was trying to win the belt. And it's just sad, man. You know, some guys when they lose a championship, you know, they get right back up, you know, have a couple fights, you know, get back on their winning ways. But man, he has been polar opposite. Yes, he has lost the belt and basically probably hasn't won a round since he lost the belt. So, and just to make things worse for you, Keys, I watched the movie Cutthroat City yesterday, and he had a cameo appearance in that movie, and he was bad in that too. But, man, I like Woodley, though, man. I think Woodley should get back. He was good on TV. When he was doing, like, UFC Tonight and the preview of post-fight shows, he was actually pretty good at that. So I still think he has a chance, man. It might not be in the octagon, but I think he's good for the TV. I think he does good TV.
Yeah, I mean, for the sake of time, you know, we'll jump into the next subject. So another rumor that has been going around, I had said this to Evan before you had jumped in with us, Lee. We were talking about this, you know, really quick. But, you know, so there had been some sources that were, you know, putting this out there that this fight is in the works for UFC 257. I had said that really nobody that I find to be a legitimate source said this. You know, nobody that I trust breaking news has said this, but it has been, you know, a good number, probably 3, 4, if not 5, possibly 6 MMA accounts, you know, that typically post MMA content have said this, that, you know, Michael Chandler versus Dan Hooker is in the works for UFC 257. You know, MMA Kings hasn't tweeted it out. Ariel Helwani hasn't tweeted it out. Bogomoto hasn't tweeted it out. So until one of those guys comes out with it, I'm not going to buy into it. But just for the sake of conversation and debate and just curiosity, what would you think about that fight if they were to make Michael Chandler's first fight be versus Dan Hooker to serve as the co-main event under, you know, Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor too?
I think for Hooker, he has more to gain in this fight, and I think Chandler has the most to lose in this fight. I think Hooker, it's going to be a 3-round fight. So if it was a 5-round fight, I would say Hooker would have a chance going into the 4th and 5th rounds. But being that it's a 3-round fight, Hooker has to protect against being knocked out in the first round, because if you watch Chandler fight, he's normally really, really busy in the first round. And if he can't knock somebody out in the first round, he normally struggles throughout the rest of the fight. So if Hooker can survive the first round, he has a chance of winning this fight. I don't really care for Hooker too much. But he has a path to win. He just has to survive the first round, have a solid game plan, and hope that Chandler becomes desperate in trying to get in the win and makes a mistake. But the UFC, they wouldn't put him in there with a Gaethje. They wouldn't put Chandler in there with Gaethje. They didn't put him in there with Tony. They put him in there with Hooker. And to me, that's them saying this is a guy you should be able to beat. I'm gonna go with Hooker, man, via upset. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think Hooker's gonna feel a little disrespected. And I think he pulls the upset, man. By decision.
So to my understanding, I thought Michael Chandler was a wrestler. They make it seem like he's this like big time wrestler. But you said that I thought you were referring to Chandler when you said if he can't get a first round knockout, then usually he struggles afterwards. I would think that he would use his wrestling, you know? I mean, I don't think I've ever seen him fight besides clips on YouTube. I've never watched him fight live. Does he wrestle a lot?
Well, when I say a knockout, I should have said a knockout / submission. If he can't get you out of there in the first round via knockout or submission, he's going to struggle. Go ahead, Evan.
No, I mean, I don't know, like, it's a 50-50 for me. Like, I got, you know, I think Chandler's got, you know, what it takes to, you know, to beat Hooker. Like you said, I agree, though, that, you know, they didn't book him against Tony, or Justin. They booked him against Hooker. So it's a clear slap in the face to Hooker saying that, you know, we believe you can beat this guy. This will be your, you know, your coming out party. And if you can, you know, you can beat this guy in devastating fashion, then it proves that you belong in the top five and then you'll get the bigger opponent. But I do disagree with the fact that, you know, if he doesn't get the first round knockout or, you know, submission within the first or second round, then he starts to struggle because, you know, Chandler's got a respected career. You know, obviously most of it is in Bellator, if not all of it. And he has gone, you know, five rounds multiple times, and he's won a great deal of those. And to where, like, Dan Hooker went five rounds twice, but you could see that his cardio was clearly, you know, affected. So I think against a guy like Chandler with that wrestling background, you know, who's going to have that cardio late rounds, I just can't. I don't know. I see Chandler getting the win on this one, but it's definitely going to be. He's definitely going to have to use his wrestling because you can actually look it up. Chandler actually put out a tweet a while ago saying that he was the kryptonite to Khabib, his wrestling, his style. But yeah, I'm telling you, he's going to use his wrestling against Hooker, and it's going to be a great fight. You know, I'm pulling for Chandler because I put way too much time into him for him to lose. So we'll see.
Yeah, I'm sure Lee wouldn't mind Chandler beating Hooker either. as much as Lee wants to be right in his prediction, he's trying to predict Hooker. To try to sway the fans, right, to make them believe that he doesn't hate Hooker the way that he actually does. So he's trying to see how he's trying to persuade y'all that he actually doesn't hate Hooker, but in actuality.
It'll be a win-win regardless.
Dan Hooker's probably his least favorite fighter in the entire UFC. So if Chandler wins, you're going to see Lee on the following show. He's actually going to be kind of happy. He's going to say, well, I was wrong, but it's kind of good because Hooker still lost. And now, so at that point, I mean, like you said, it's a win-win. If, you know, either way, either Hooker gets, if Hooker gets a win over Chandler, I don't really know what would be the exact next thing to happen after that, but I do know that would be a very big win, probably the biggest win of his career, by far. And I mean, it's already, if it does happen, it's already the biggest fight of his career. If he were to win, it's the biggest moment of his career. I don't know if he would rise in the rankings. I don't even know. Chandler, I would assume, is not even in the rankings. So I don't really know if Hooker moves up or what that does. But I know if Chandler wins, they're probably just going to put him next for the title, you know, because I don't see that you guys have convinced me that they wouldn't have him fight more than one fight before his title shot. So I figure if he wins there, the UFC hopes he wins there. And, you know, if he is this high-level wrestler like I'm hearing, then I would think they put him in there versus a guy like Dan Hooker who really doesn't do much of that so that he can just take him down, you know, at will and just kind of, you know, control the fight and have a impressive performance so they can, you know, have a reason to say, oh, he dominated, you know, the number 5 lightweight in his first fight, so now he's going to fight for the title. And, you know, I would think that's almost exactly what the UFC is having in mind with that fight.
Yeah, I think it goes back to something Evan said. It's like, you know, as soon as he signs his contract, he's in the backup role for the Gaethje-Khabib fight. And then they go radio silent for a while, and then all of a sudden now it's starting to be like some chirping that he's going to fight Hooker. So I just think it's just one of them things that the UFC wants to get him close to the belt.
I agree.
Now, we had talked about this. I don't know if we did. We didn't really dive into it, but I think we touched on it. Anthony Pettis signed with PFL. Lee, didn't you say that was what he was going to do?
Yeah, when we brought it up, I think one of you guys tweeted out that he was going to free agency. And then I replied to the tweet saying I thought he would re-sign with the UFC. But if not, I see him going to PFL. And lo and behold, he's going to PFL. But a lot of people got to realize that PFL, you get $1 million if you win it. If you win it all, you get $1 million. That's very, very enticing to a lot of fighters.
I mean, because a lot of guys aren't seeing that payday, you know, in their promotion.
No.
You know, unless...
Not even close.
You know, even, like, most of the champions in the UFC aren't even making $1 million. I mean, unless you're, like, even Jon Jones, like, in his last couple of title defenses, I don't think made $1 million for any of those last two or three title defense. I don't think he made $1 million for any of those. You know, he probably made like 500. You know, he probably made 500,000. I'm not hating on that. That's, you know, to me, I'm happy about that. But at the same time, I think he should make more. Yes, but I'm just pointing out the fact that I don't think he made $1 million for, you know, his last three title defenses. Maybe he made $1 million for the Gustafsson rematch, and I know he made good money. I know Cormier made $1 million. For his John Jones rematch. You know, there's certain champions who will see $1 million in the UFC. I mean, McGregor, obviously, Khabib obviously makes, you know, millions. He made, I think, like $6 million versus Gaethje. Certain champions will see $1 million in the UFC. But for the most part, I think most of these promotions aren't having payouts like that, and most of the UFC roster isn't seeing numbers like that. So I can, you know, to your point, I can understand why Pettis would look at that and say, hey, PFL might be a good move for me.
Yeah, speaking of John Jones, UFC starting at UFC 182, he started making $500,000 a fight. That was in March of March of 2015. Wow. Yeah,
I mean,
that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So he had already had 7 title defenses before he started making $500,000.
Yeah, that's I don't really like that. That's kind of weak. That's really weak. The thing that I wanted to bring up to you, actually, I mean, Pettis is going to PFL. I definitely wish him well. You know, one thing that I would say about that, and this is probably one of the immediate thoughts that I have when I think about that, is PFL still has really good guys. It's not like they have a weak roster of fighters, especially this new season that's coming up. They've added on a lot of good fighters to their roster, a lot of former UFC guys. And even before that, they have a lot of good guys. And, you know, I don't watch PFL, but I have watched, you know, a lot of their previous fights back on YouTube and stuff like that. So, like, I have an understanding of, you know, the level that a lot of their guys are at. And these aren't, like, you know, these aren't easy fights. So, especially where Pettis is going to go in and fight in the lightweight division. I think he's, I just hope he doesn't think that it's going to be like easier than like fighting in the UFC's like lightweight or welterweight, because I don't think that it is. If, you know, I don't think it'll be easy. Like, I don't think it's the same thing as like saying, you know, if Demetrius, like where Demetrius Johnson goes over to one championship and is able to compete and win the flyweight Grand Prix. Like, I don't think it's the same story as that, where he was able to cross over and then win, you know, be still at a high enough level to win, you know, be potentially the best in the flyweight division at one championship. I don't think Pettis is in a place in his career, unless he has some, you know, changes camps or has some kind of resurgence. I just don't think he's at the level where he's going to go over there and get that, you know, $1 million payday. I think that's going to be, I think that would be very difficult for him to do unless he makes big changes.
Yeah, I totally agree, because if you look at the fight for Saturday, if Morano does one or two things differently, he probably submits Pettis in the first round. Being that he couldn't do those one or two things, I just had a feeling that Pettis would come back and win rounds 2 and 3, and that's what he did. But if you just go back to what Morano did in the first round, if he does one or two things and becomes a little bit more patient, he probably submits on Pettis in the first round. So I agree with what you're saying, Keys.
You know, if I may, it's pretty crazy to think that Pettis is only 33 years old. I don't know if we brought that up. I apologize. We did. But that's just honestly kind of interesting to think about. You know, 33 is not old, you know, not for nothing. You know, if you go and look at his record of his past few fights, it's not like Sane's amount of damage. You know, he's had some decent, you know, some good fights, some 3-rounders and, you know, whatnot. I think he's just still got it. I just don't think, you know, I agree with both of what you're saying, you know, the PFL and the Demetrius Johnson thing. But I do believe, you know, I don't know much about PFL's 155-pound division. I'll have to do some more research on that. But I do know that Pettis did say that he wants to do the PFL 155, And then by not this next year, but the year after that, 2022, he wants to go to 170. And that's where it gets interesting because Rory McDonald is in PFL now at 170. And that's an interesting fight to see. Just wanted to throw that out there.
Now, I have a question. I have a question for y'all. So I was reading something. Now, this is something Ariel Helwani said probably about 2 days ago, and I'm surprised that Lee hadn't tagged me in this, or maybe he didn't see it, or, you know, if he did see it, that he didn't bring it up to me bring it up to us so far tonight. But so Ariel Helwani said that the UFC is planning, and I had partially predicted this. I didn't say it on the show, but I was saying it to one of my friends the other day, that I feel like John Jones' transition to heavyweight is going to take longer than people expect, and that I had said that I thought we probably wouldn't see him fighting in the heavyweight division until probably summer 2021 at the earliest, because I just feel like it will take him longer. He's put the weight on, but I think it will take him longer to get acclimated to the weight. It will take him longer, you know, getting in physical shape for heavyweight, where he's put on a lot of weight, but he doesn't want to have too much fat on him and such. He wants to maintain his speed, get used to, you know, he wants to develop his speed and get used to, you know, throwing his combinations with the weight and get, you know, everything on point to where it needs to be, to where he you know, he's confident and he's able to fight as a heavyweight. And I just feel like that would take him a long time. So summer 21 at the earliest. So after I had that conversation, Ariel Helwani came out and said that, he had found out from the UFC that they're planning to have, you know, they're planning to have it be Stipe Miocic defending his title against Francis Ngannou in, I want to say, March. And then the winner of that fight would be defending the belt, would be turning around and defending the belt against John Jones, summer of 2021. Now, what do either of you guys think about that? Lee, I assume you will jump in to go first.
I like the way his body is looking. He's definitely at heavyweight now. I think Stipe's fighting schedule is more frustrating than anything in a division because, you know, you just never know when he's going to fight. It's like he fights and then he's off for like an extended amount of time. So it's basically like it's a holding pattern. So I think they should put him in there against another heavyweight, prior to putting him in there against the winner of the Stipe and Ngannou fight. If I was him, I would want to get in there with another heavyweight just so I can see where I'm at fighting at this weight. How did my body react to me fighting at this weight? But I get it. You know, he's throwing his clout around. He's probably the most dominant 205 champ in the UFC history, and he's moving up to heavyweight. And he feels like on the UFC or something. So, but if I was advising him, I would advise him to take another fight. And then if you win that fight, then, all right, let's go after this belt. But just to be fighting the champ right off the bat, that's kind of a stretch.
Evan, what do you think about it?
I actually saw that too. Didn't think. I agree with Lee. I believe Jones should take a fight, but I get it. It's best to not even risk. You know, like obviously they want him to win. Like they want Jones to just get that accolade because as soon as Jones wins the heavyweight title, it's just going to be a knock at DC because that's the only thing that holds DC away from Jones is winning the heavyweight title. And then when Jones goes and does it now, it's just whatever. But regardless, there were some rumblings. I know it was never going to be a real thing, but there were some rumblings of Jones fighting Curtis Blaydes. I think that honestly would have been a perfect, you know, startup fight for Jones to really see. you know, young guy, wrestler, not the best strike, like not a bad striker, but he's not gonna strike you. He's gonna wrestle you, and it's gonna be interesting to see, you know, how Jones handles, you know, coming up to the big boys, even though he's been a bigger guy himself at 205, with pretty much impeccable, you know, takedown defense. Besides against, you know, Gus and DC, I think got one takedown, but it was not much. So just a different beast. But I turn around. I know that's the problem to Lee's point of Stipe's schedule. The problem is that they want to do they want to skip Francis and just do Stipe versus Jones. Like, they don't want to deal with Francis, but they have to because he deserves it. He deserves the title more than Jones. But in the UFC, it's all about money. So they'll do Francis. They'll hope Stipe beats Francis again, and then they'll hope that Jones beats Stipe. But personally, I kind of hope Francis wins because I really would love to see Francis versus John Jones. Like, I think that sells better to the casual fan and just the entertainment portion of the fans of MMA. I think that sells better than Stipe versus John Jones. What do you guys think?
I would have to agree. I definitely have to agree. It's just tough, man. It's just tough bringing a champion up and trying to get him to take a fight while he's waiting. It's just tough, but I do agree with what you said, though, Abby.
Keith? Yeah, I mean, as far as the point of you wanting, you know, hoping Ngannou wins, I mean, when the fight happens, I'll root for Stipe, obviously, because he's, like, one of my favorite fighters. And I can't let them forget. I saw that first fight live at TD Bank North Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. It was, I think, UFC 220. I believe it was January 20th, 2018, live at the TD Garden, Boston, Massachusetts. I was there live to see it. Stipe Miocic versus Francis Ngannou for the heavyweight title, Ultimate Fighting Championship. It was beautiful. It was magnificent. It was a spectacular, tremendous, strong title defense from Stipe Miocic. So, yes, I will be rooting for him versus Ngannou in the second fight. But to your point of wanting to see Ngannou versus Jones, I very much agree with that because I would probably rather see that fight more than Stipe versus Jones at this point. And my reason for that would more probably be because we did just see Stipe three times in a row versus Daniel Cormier. So I don't really need to see Stipe that bad versus Jones. Just that stylistic fight, I just don't really need to see. I would probably rather see Jones versus Ngannou. So I agree with you on that point there for sure.
I'm just saying. I think, you know, because I think someone put it out earlier this week. The highest pay-per-view of this year was obviously McGregor versus Cowboy. I think it did 1.31 or something like that. And the second closest was the Usman Masvidal, which was co-headlined by Volkanovski Max 2, and then Jan versus Aldo. But that's kind of crazy that it went. You had three title fights that were solid fights. Three title fights. And you had Masvidal on the card, and it still couldn't beat out McGregor-Cowboy. Because, let's be honest, McGregor-Cowboy's undercard, like the main card, below Conor and Cowboy, was garbage. Like, it was a garbage main card. And this upcoming card for the Poirier one is just looking the same. Like, they're just they're literally basically telling us we're charging you $65-$70 for Connor. And I'm like, dude, that's great. Charge me that. But then don't make me sit through all these other crap fights. Let me just watch Connor and whoever his opponent is. I don't want to sit through the other crap. Like, we got Jessica Eye on the main card. I'm sorry. I have no
idea. That's actually a good point, Evan. I don't really understand why. Because if you look back, when he was coming back, when McGregor was coming back from boxing after he fought Mayweather, when he was coming in 2018, he made like this, they wrote up like a new contract with the UFC. And I don't know if this is still in effect now with his current contract. I mean, I would think that it is, because I think at that time he signed a five fight contract. So his first one of that five would have been the Khabib fight. So the Cowboy one would have been his second fight, and this would be his third fight on that five fight contract. And one of the stakes in that contract was that, for him to sign it, that would mean that, any card that he is on, whether he's in a title fight or not, there cannot be any other champions on the card with him. Now, that is kind of unrelated to this, because obviously, it wouldn't make sense for that to happen, because he wouldn't be in the co-main event. They would never put McGregor in the co-main event and then another title fight above it, because really, there's no title fight that's going to go above a McGregor fight, at least at this stage of the game.
They tried to do it once. They tried to do Cormier versus Lesnar as the main event, and I think it was going to be Conor Cowboy as the co-main, and Conor was like, no. Conor was literally like, no.
Well, it was going to be the Aldo rematch, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, was it? All right.
Originally, it was going to be, because they were going to do the Aldo rematch. People make it seem like he never wanted the rematch. He was going to do it on UFC 200, but then they wanted, that and Brock Lesnar to be the main event, and then Conor to be, and so then he ended up backing out of the whole card, and then he didn't rematch Aldo. But the thing about that is that, so he, understand why even while he has that clause about there being no champion on the card with him, I don't get why you can't, like, there's so many good fights that you can make that aren't title fights. Like, we saw that with this past weekend's card, where you had UFC 250, was it UFC 256, or what card was that we just watched? You had Aldo and
Marlon
Vera.
Yeah, it was Stephen Thompson versus Jeff Neal, Aldo versus Marlon Vera. You had Michelle Paheya versus Caitlin Williams, which sucked. You had Marlon Moraes and Rob Font, and then you had the woman beater, Greg Hardy, on the card. But we won't get into all that. But you had tons of great fights slapped onto a fight night card, which is great. But then, to your point, they're asking us to pay for all this money, to basically watch Conor. And like I said, I'm fine with that. But do that, please, for the love of anything. Don't make me sit through Jessica Eye.
But how amazing would it have been, like, if you could have had that card and then McGregor main event the card at the end? Like, I don't get me wrong. With the fact that Khamzat Chimaev and Leon Edwards got canceled, okay, so then Thompson and Jeff Neal would have never been the main event if that didn't get canceled. But don't get me wrong, they still deserve to have a main event spot, Thompson and Neal. They still deserve a main event spot. But what I'm saying is how awesome would it have been, even if they saved like a couple of those fights, even if they save like a couple of the fights from that card and then save a couple of the fights from the Ortega and Zombie card and combine those two cards, or even take like one fight from the UFC 256 card, which was another good card in my opinion, and then put those all up on the McGregor card? Like, why can't you have all these? Why can't you have good fights? Like, I don't understand, like, to your point, why the last two McGregor cards were just so underwhelming. Like, why is it such a boring card up until the main event?
It's because the UFC knows, Dana White knows, that the fans, casual or not, are going to pay the pay-per-view. They're going to, and especially since we can't go see Conor, they're going to pay for it. So they know it doesn't matter what the undercard is. Like, it doesn't matter. So that's why they're like, all right, well, then we can save all of these good banger fights for other, you know, fight night cards and stack those up, because we know they're going to pay to see Conor. And that's it. That's what they're doing. They're telling us, we know you're going to pay for Conor, so we're going to give you crap, but then we're going to give you Conor at the end, so you're just going to have to suffer for a little bit. And we do. We always suffer.
Lee, what do you think about it?
Everybody know Conor is a draw. He's the biggest draw in the UFC. I think that's why they can get away with probably having a quote-unquote lackluster fight card, because they know people are going to buy the pay-per-view because of Conor McGregor. I would just hope that whenever Conor fights, that you at least have three solid fights up there to warrant a pay-per-view, you know. Because normally the prelim main event, you know, that's normally a good fight. But but how many cars really have Conor really? I mean, that Madison Square Garden card was pretty stacked. I want to say for the MSG. Did he fight at MSG?
Yeah, that was
he fought at MSG. Yeah, I want to say that card was stacked. But
title fights and everything.
Yeah, but the UFC is smart though. They know that people want to see the guy fight, man. They know his fans will pay to see him fight. So why stack his card when you could save some of the old fighters for down the road? But this is one aspect of the UFC that's starting to turn me off a little bit, is fighters picking and choosing who they want to fight. Poirier turned down a fight, well, quote-unquote, allegedly turned down a fight with Tony Ferguson because he didn't like the pace situation. I mean, I understand with Conor how the UFC is going to operate with him. They probably will allow him to, quote-unquote, pick and choose who he wants to fight. Although glad that they didn't give him Diego Sanchez. That would have been the dumbest thing ever. But, as long as Conor is a draw, man, that's what they're going to do.
And, you know, not for nothing, just real quick before we, you know, change up. The McGregor-Cowboy pay-per-view did more pay-per-view buys than McGregor-Diaz, Usman-Masvidal, and Alvarez-McGregor. Like, it did over a million, but it tells you exactly what we're talking about. The undercard, the main card was not good. Like, I'm sorry, but, like, if I may real fast, the co-main event was a rematch of Holly Holm versus Raquel Pennington. No. You had Alexi Olenek versus Maurice Green. Nada. Brian Kelleher was fine. And then Diego Ferreira submitted Anthony Pettis. Those were the only other, you know, nameable fights on that card. And it still did more pay-per-view buys than a triple title headlined MSG card. That's the power of Conor McGregor. Like, that's the problem.
And that's why Keys thinks I don't like Conor. I just don't like the way the UFC have propped him up to be basically bigger than the company, it seems to me, whereas he could call his own shots. And basically they created a monster. It's like you created a monster, you can't handle the monster, but you need the monster to lace your pockets here and there. And that's just one of the things I just don't like, because no other fighters get that kind of preferential treatment. So, you know, but it's part of the business, though.
Just real quickly, I know it's kind of, I think we've talked about it maybe a few times, but we haven't really, like, I feel like truly discussed it. But have we given our, like, kind of early predictions for Conor, Dustin, like how we truly think the fight's going to go down? Like, I know we will for the pay-per-view, but like, do you guys see like Poirier winning, or do you see this as just a gimme fight for Conor?
I say Conor knocks him out in the third round. I think Dustin will play right into Conor's hand. He won't try to do anything as far as like to take him down, nothing like that. He's going to want to prove that his boxing has improved since they first fight, and that's going to play right into Conor's hands. Conor will sting him with a left, stagger him a little bit, hurt him real bad, and then he'll get a technical knockout.
Keys, what do you think?
So, being that the fight is a month away from today, it's definitely relevant for us to have Scott talk about it. So, good call on that, Evan. And I'm not sure what I said early. I don't even think last time we talked about it, I don't remember if I made a prediction or not. I might have not made a prediction. You guys might have made predictions and I didn't. But as the fight gets closer, I'm just more and more worried. I'm actually worried. I think it's I think there's a lot higher chance of Poirier winning than people are making it seem. I think there's a much higher chance. I mean, if you look at it, his cardio is way better. It's way better. And I feel like that's going to play a huge part in this fight. And I think he knows that, you know, just looking at it. I mean, someone even pointed out the other day how Poirier's record at lightweight is like, I think they said it was like, I don't know if they said it was 7-1 or 11-1 or, but either way, or 8-1, but he had, either way, McGregor only has 2 fights at lightweight and Poirier has 8, 9, 10 fights at lightweight. And I mean, I only lost 1 fight. I'm not, the win loss is not the importance, but just the how many more fights he has at that weight than McGregor does, I think is a huge factor here. And he knows that his cardio is way better than Conor's is right now. You know, McGregor was lucky to knock out Poirier the way he did in the first fight, but since that time, Poirier has advanced so much, and you don't have to deal with. Like in the first fight, you didn't have to deal with Poirier's cardio. Now you're going to have to deal with Poirier's cardio and pace. His pace is unbelievable. I think McGregor, you know, I would think that he should hope to be able to knock out Poirier early on in the fight, because I feel like as the fight goes on, it's just going to be more and more difficult for him, because Poirier, you know, we know he can fight a 5-round fight just fine. Like, you know, you can see him tired by the 4th round. Like, when you watch, you know, his fight with Holloway is, like, a great, you know, thing to look at for this. You know, he, in the 4th round of that fight, you could see, you know, Poirier was tired, but he really didn't, you know, it takes him a lot longer to see that he's, like, noticeably fading than most guys. You know, Poirier, I feel like, has one of the best cardios in the UFC. Probably even has a better cardio than Ferguson. And people, you know, always praise Ferguson for his cardio. But I think that's going to be a big thing in this fight. I know I'm more and more worried about McGregor losing as the time draws closer. And I think, you know, I don't know what I think for the odds, but I if it was me, I would put the odds pretty damn close for this fight. I think it could even
cut you off, but if you give me like two seconds, I can tell you what the odds are. Right now, Connor, for my FanDuel, Connor is a -250 and Dustin is a +205.
That's close.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. That's fair. Because I thought for a second you were going to say, you know, McGregor was like a -500. If that was the case, I'd say that's bogus. Like, it's not, you know, it's, the line shouldn't get, it should not be. If anything, it should, as the fight draws, I would think that it's going to tighten as the fight draws closer. Because I think it's actually a really debatable fight. I don't think this is an easy win for McGregor just because he knocked out Poirier from 6 years ago. I think this is a totally different fight now. And I think Poirier is going to go in very confidently, but I don't think that means that confidence is going to mean recklessness. You know what I mean? Like Alvarez.
Yeah, I got you.
No,
I agree with that.
I agree with that as well. And I do think it's going to be a tougher fight than most will give credit for. Because one of the incredible leaps and bounds that Dustin has made, and just there's just a general, it's just a generally a good fight, and they're both top tier talent. Plus, I actually caught their first fight. It was on YouTube. I don't know if it was like the free fight kind of thing or if it was just like some sort of clip, but I watched it, and Dustin was landing on Connor. Like Connor was throwing a lot of unnecessary. Like strikes, and he was throwing a lot of spinning back kicks, and just kind of, I feel like he was kind of just trying to, you know, work the crowd more than he was trying to get the win. And you know, obviously he got the win, so what I'm saying is just silly. But I don't know. You go back and watch that fight. Dustin landed on him, and I think, you know, Dustin just let him get in his head, just like everyone has. Aldo, Eddie, only Nate was the only one that didn't let Connor get in his head, and you know, it worked for him. Same with Khabib. Didn't work. Cowboy just didn't want to be there. But this fight, there's no bad blood. It's just professionalism. It's just going to be a great fight, great competitive fight. I can't wait.
I think it's one thing we do need to point out, though, because I know we pointed out for Tony Ferguson, is Conor does tend to fight for the crowd, and there won't be a crowd. I don't know how that's going to affect his performance because Dustin has fought during the pandemic, so he knows what to expect without a crowd, whereas Connor hasn't.
That's actually
a huge point. See, this is what I'm trying to say. This is what I'm trying to say to y'all. This is a much different fight. This is a very different fight than people are making it seem. I don't think this is, you know, a tune-up fight or something like this or something, you know what I mean, that's obvious. I think there's been many variables here. I think there's many variables. I think there's going to be more variables in the next, you know, 3 weeks going into fight week. I feel like there's going to be even more variables that pop in my head and in other people's head. You're going to start to realize, like, wow, this fight is actually really close. This is a very, very debatable fight, and that's a good point to bring up about there being no crowd.
Mm.
And Evan, like you said in the first fight, it was almost like Evan was alluding to what you just said about how it looked like McGregor was kind of fighting for the crowd in that first fight. And then when you compare it now, there's going to be no fans. They're going to fight on Fight Island. And
well, to
and the bigger cage.
Oh, the bigger cage too. That's true. That's actually very true. If I may, real quick, you know, what is an interesting thought is that, you know, Dana White, you know, because this, the Conor pay-per-view is, it's part of the triple fight week. You know, we start with Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar, then on Saturday, and then on Wednesday, we get Hamzat Chimaev versus Leon Edwards, and then that following Saturday, we get the Conor fight. And I was told that Dana White's actually trying to do, you know, the international fight week that normally would be in like July. You know, he's kind of hoping he can do that, you know, for Conor and try to bring out some fans to Abu Dhabi. So I wonder if we actually might get fans because I wonder if they fear for that for Conor. Like he's a crowd fighter and with him not getting his crowd, you know, that reaction when he's walking out, you know, when he looks in the camera and hears the roar of the fans, he's not going to get that. So I'm wondering if they're, you know, trying to plan for him, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Just some thoughts.
Yeah, man. You know, like Key said, there are a lot of variables. There are going to be even more probably within the next 3 weeks. And I might change my prediction, man.
All right. Well, we hit a lot of topics on this show. I feel like that's a good place to stop, but we don't want to get too far into that. We got to save up because I have a feeling we're going to be talking about this, you know, a couple more times, multiple. Well, I know I'm going to be talking about it. You guys might not want to. Even if I'm just talking to myself about it, I know I'm going to be talking about it, you know, a good handful of times between now and amongst them today. So, you know, we'll save that for them.
Can we talk about something really, really quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, man. This Ben Askren, man.
Oh, no.
Come on, man. Come on, y'all. Are we serious? Ben Askren and Jake Logan? Or is it Jake Paul? All right, I don't even
Jake
know
Paul.
The kid. Man.
Jake Paul.
Are we serious? This is where we at, man? Ben Askren going to do a boxing match? Come on, bro.
It
ain't so.
I'm being told that it's going to happen. And then, you know, I guess when Jake wins, he's going to fight Dylan Danis next, who has worse. I don't know who has worse striking out of the two. Like, it's not good for either. It's funny, like, he's really going to beat up Askren, and then he's going to try to beat up Dylan Danis, which would be hilarious if Danis just, like, went on the ground and just strangled him, which Askren could do the same thing. But in the end, you know, not for nothing, but in the end, Jake Paul's not getting the Conor fight. It's never happening. Like, he will never, ever, and I don't want to be, like, that stupid guy on the sports talk show, I think Max Kellerman is his name, the guy who said that Conor wasn't going to land a punch on Floyd, obvious that Conor was going to land a punch. But when I say that Jake Paul's not fighting Conor McGregor, I really hope I can say that and be truthful that Conor does not stoop to that level and fight Jake Paul. I just can't. That is just, that'll hurt. That'll hurt the sport of MMA and boxing dearly.
Keys?
Yeah, that fight is garbage.
Man.
I was like, look, I was like, you were like, can we talk about something real quick? And he was like, all right. And then when I heard him say Ben Askren, I was like, oh, my goodness. I was like, this is what he wanted to take a couple of extra minutes for, talk about this. Oh, my goodness gracious. You guys, you know what? I'm mad at y'all. I'm mad at y'all because the general public, you know what? I don't even blame Lee. I blame y'all because the thing is this. When they did Mayweather versus McGregor, fans made us feel like buffoons. They made us feel so stupid that we wanted to see that fight. Now look how stupid it's got. You got people that are not boxers, like Paul Logan or what's his name? Jake Logan is boxing and shit. Excuse my language. These aren't even boxers, and they're like co-main event and boxing cards. Okay, y'all were ragging on us for wanting to see Mayweather versus McGregor. At least McGregor is actually a fighter. At least he actually boxing is something that he's been doing for, you know, he's been training at a boxing gym since he was a little kid. At least he actually been doing this. He hasn't been recording YouTube videos for the past 5 years. These dudes came out of nowhere. Now, like, some of the only things that boxing can do to actually sell tickets for a fight, and then now these dudes want to fight, are out here challenging dudes who don't even, boxing isn't even something that they train. like I said, McGregor, at least he's been training at a boxing gym since he was a little kid. So even though he was an MMA fighter, he's been training boxing as his main discipline for a long time. You got these dudes who aren't even boxers calling out dudes who are MMA fighters who don't even specialize in boxing. Ben Askren was an Olympic wrestler. His boxing is garbage. And then you have Dylan Danis, who I don't even know if he knows how to throw a punch. I hate to say it, but he's like a Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy. You know, he's supposed to be excellent on the mat. But how do we know he even, like, can strike? Like, this dude is not, like, man, this is the worst fight. Oh, my goodness gracious. Y'all kill me. Y'all kill me with that
man.
Fight, man. That's a terrible fight.
The funny part was when I saw it, I was like, nah, man, this can't be true. And then I got to thinking, I was like, this dude couldn't even strike in the UFC. Like, is he going to get in there and try to box? It's like, come on, man. And then he released some video on Instagram talking about he going to humble Jake Paul and all this. Man, this is going to be terrible. It's going to end bad. And it just makes me more furious that Demetrius Johnson is over in one instead of in the UFC. And they traded Demetrius Johnson for this guy. All right, Keith, you can close this. Oh, go ahead, Evan.
I'll be quick. Now, I know a lot of people always talk about how they're upset that the UFC traded Demetrius for Askren. But let's be real. Demetrius Johnson was never going to get the respect he deserved in the UFC. And Ben Askren was a perfect fit for the UFC. He talked the crap. He backed it up in one fight, sort of. And then, you know, he built Masvidal into a star. And then he got strangled by Maya. So he did his part in what the UFC wanted. And Demetrius is he's growing as a mixed martial artist the way he wanted to. He's getting respected. He's going to get the title fight. I know a lot of people are not happy with the trade, but it was clear that it makes the most sense when you look at the dynamic of each promotion as a whole. Just wanted to throw that out there, of course.
We will come back to this topic. We will come back to this topic. Yes,
I'm ready. I'm ready. All right, Keys, talk to me.
But yeah, no, that's it. I mean, we wanted to go over to talk about that that terrible fight that Lee wanted to preview for us. That absolute joke of a combat sports fight. That's not even a spectacle. That's just embarrassing. That's what that is. That ain't even a spectacle. Y'all, I'm mad at y'all because y'all ragged on us for wanting to see McGregor fight Mayweather. At least that was two guys who train boxing. You got two, you know, man, that fight is a disgrace. That's a disgrace. And y'all should feel ashamed of yourselves for supporting it and paying attention to that guy. Y'all should be ashamed. I don't even click on his post when I see it. I'm not even going to say his name. Y'all know what I'm talking about, and it's your fault. You should be ashamed. So that's the end of it, and the show's over. It was great. Evan, you've done spectacular on our show thus far.
Thanks.
Great job again. In the new year, we're going to be transitioning to a new platform. We already confirmed the platform, so that's going to be happening within the next month, probably by the first week of February, probably the latest, we'll be starting our first show on that new platform. So we already have that pretty much already talked over, so we're going to be putting that into concrete soon, and yeah. So some other changes will probably be there, but it'll be all understandable. And that's all I got. So everybody enjoy. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the holidays. You know, tomorrow, the next day, and the rest of the holidays. You have New Year's around the corner. So everybody just enjoy the holidays. You know, whatever holiday it is you celebrate, have a good time with your family and loved ones. And yeah, that's all I got. Lee and Keys, Lee Lee E and Keys, because it's Evan too. Lee E and Keys. You know what I mean? That might have to be a rendition on the name. Lee E and Keys. Lee E and Keys. Lee and Keys. No, I'll work it out. Go ahead.
Evan, you got any last words?
No, man, just like I said, you know, thank you always for the opportunity to be on here and just talk with you guys, just, you know, speak on something I'm extremely passionate about. MMA is everything to me. Without MMA, I have no clue where my life would be right now. I really don't, because my life, literally 4 days a week plus Saturdays, is MMA when I do kickboxing. And I, you know, I watch MMA every day. Like, I do something with UFC or some form of fighting every single day. So this show is just everything to me. So I appreciate that. But with all that being said, great show. Really had a lot of fun tonight. You know, happy holidays to everyone, whatever you guys are doing out there. And, yeah, can't wait for the next one and can't wait for the fights. Thank you.
Yeah, man, happy holidays to you guys, man. Hope y'all have a good holiday season. You know, whatever you celebrate, not everybody celebrate Christmas. You know, next Wednesday, I'm gonna try to do the show next Wednesday, Keith and Evan, but I'm not going to make any promises. But I will be there that first show in January, so we do the, hopefully, the year review show. I will be live for that one. But, man, I just want to say, man, I'm so proud of you guys, man, and how much we've grown this year. And it's probably a lot of people that I know 2020 has been tough on them. But hopefully listening to our show and reading our tweets and, you know, it brought you some form of entertainment, put a smile on your face, you know. I just love doing this show, man. I love doing this show. I love doing it with you guys. Looking for bigger and better things in 2021. I turned 50 in 2021. So, hey, happy holidays. Happy New Year. Live, love, laugh. Live your life to the fullest. Tell somebody you love them. Have one good laugh every day. Lee Keys and Evan holding off the show with a peace.